Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. Jim, it's not often that we directly cite BuzzFeed, but they are the source of our good martini today in a piece written by McKay Coppins. BuzzFeed, for those who are not familiar with it, not exactly a bastion of conservatism, although they certainly take shots at the left as well. And the story is about the statements, several of them, in fact, and positions taken by Mitt Romney during the 2012 campaign that at the time were ridiculed for being old-fashioned, short-sighted, what have you. Turns out pretty much most of them were prescient. Mitt Romney stated that Russia was our biggest geopolitical foe, and as the story goes, when you look at their support for the Syrians, their support for the Iranians, their harboring now of Edward Snowden, turns out Romney might have been onto something there. The al-Qaeda presence in Mali was dealt with just a couple months after the election. Obviously, the bankruptcy of Detroit, that he was not in favor of the government bailout of the auto industry there. So, Jim, obviously, there's a little bit of advisors of Romney touting what a great president he would be. We obviously believe he would have been better than Obama. But the fact that the media, the Democrats, just thought all of these statements were ridiculous and not up to speed, it looks like Mitt Romney was proven right here.
Yeah, you know, the standard question now is, where does Mitt Romney go to get his reputation back? By the way, worth noting, BuzzFeed has brought on McKay Coppins, who's the person who wrote this article, and Benny Johnson as kind of their more right-of-center contributors, and they have some useful stuff. And to its credit, BuzzFeed has evolved beyond 12 cats who look like Putin and stuff like that, the traditional content that they provided. This is a really important piece. Whether or not it actually leads to anything is not all that likely. But nonetheless, look, it's not just that Romney said things like, you know, Russia is our number one geopolitical foe. It's that, and it's not just that he got tough coverage for that and the Obama administration dismissed it. It's that the media never really took it seriously. And it's not like, you know, somehow magically after, you know, only in 2013 did Russia become difficult. The evidence was always all out there. The headline about "Let Detroit Go Bankrupt," obviously that was written by the New York Times, and his, you know, nobody really bothered to look at the op-ed. No, by the way, here we are months later, Detroit goes bankrupt. Look, that article speaks for a lot of what a lot of Republicans are thinking right now. A lot of conservatives are thinking, look, none of us are that shocked that Syria has turned into such a mess, because these guys always walked around with a vision of the world that we contended didn't match how the world really is. You know, the reset button with Russia was never going to do any good, because it wasn't that we weren't nice enough to them. It's that we had dramatically and oftentimes diametrically opposed interests. It's not that we're shocked that the UN isn't doing anything about Syria. It's we've never had much faith in the UN. There is no international community to speak of. And now Barack Obama says we have to bomb Syria because the international community cannot be silent. Mr. President, open your eyes. One, there is no international community to speak of. There is no collective voice. All right, it's there. There are 178 separate nations, but most of those 178 separate nations, about 175 of them, aren't willing to do anything about Syria and the use of chemical weapons beyond issue a denouncing statement. All right, if you're not willing to contribute troops or air force or anything to this effort, then you're not really that opposed to chemical weapons. And this is the ugly truth that conservatives had their eyes open to for a really long time, and liberals have always closed their eyes to and plugged their ears and said, nah, 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 I'm not listening. You know, the United Nations has never been an effective, at least it's been like for 20 years, it's not been an effective tool for solving crises. And the president insisted it was, and now he's shocked to learn that the UN is not going to do anything in response to a Syrian chemical weapons use because of the Russian veto. Well, welcome, Mr. President, to the world the rest of us have been living in for a really long time. Anyway, good article. Buyer's remorse may be setting in for a bunch of folks over Obama and his decision-making since the presidential election, but for those of us, it's not surprising. And I think this kind of lays the case both for 2014 and for 2016. Mr. You know, Americans, look, you got the president you deserved after the votes you cast in 2012.
Yeah, it says something about America when the guy who was talking about the difficulties of implementing Obamacare, Russia's our geopolitical foe, lost to the guy who focused on the war on women and Big Bird.
Big Bird, yeah, you know, birth control.
All right, on to the bad martini now, and 2 days of testimony, and it's just not getting any better for John Kerry as he tries to convince members, yesterday it was, of the House to support the use of force resolution. The numbers are very interesting on that. Right now there are more no's than yeses, but we know that Nancy Pelosi is expected to twist quite a few arms on this. But Jim, the background on this not looking good for the administration or for the United States, for that matter. John Kerry yesterday, in responding to questions, saying essentially that rebels in Syria are very largely made up of moderates, and any al-Qaeda or radical presence in there is being overblown by critics of the president's policy, and those folks really wouldn't be playing that much of a role. According to Reuters, U.S. and allied intelligence sources and private experts on the Syrian conflict suggest that assessment is optimistic. While the radical Islamists among the rebels may not be numerically superior to more moderate fighters, Islamist groups like the al-Qaeda-aligned Nusra Front are better organized, armed, and trained. Kerry's remarks represented a change in tone by the Obama administration, which for more than 2 years has been wary of sending U.S. arms to the rebels, citing fears they could fall into radical Islamist hands. If that weren't enough, the New York Times reporting today that there's a new video out showing Syrian rebels just executing Syrian soldiers that they had captured. And obviously it's leading to more people wondering what's the difference between the two sides here. So, Jim, it looks like reality and the president's case he's trying to make here do not seem to be lining up very much.
No, and so when Kerry made his testimony earlier in the week, you have this thinking of, boy, you know, he's getting the classified briefings and we're not. But boy, the portrait he painted of the Syrian resistance sure did look different from what we were seeing in the news coverage. In fact, there's actually a report saying now that actually there's some intelligence that kind of contradicts what Kerry is saying. The New York Times apparently has made its choice on this war because a giant, very wide picture of stripped down Syrian soldiers shortly before their execution by the resistance forces. So I think it was either Jim Treacher or somebody else had said moderate Syrian opposition caught moderately committing moderate war crimes over in moderate Syria. Meet the allies. Meet the beneficiaries of a U.S. strike on Syria. You know, and it reemphasizes the fact that, look, a lot of Americans have, you know, quite wisely, I think, assessed that there is no side in Syria who is currently worthy of U.S. support. There may be factions within the resistance that are not such bad folks. But for now, one, it's hard to tell them apart. It's hard to say exactly because they're constantly splintering and reforming and all these other things. And then the second thing is just a question of, what are we opening the door to if we do get involved? I mean, yeah, we justifiably loathe and hate what Assad did with the chemical weapons. The problem is, if he ends up being deposed and the next guy's in charge, how much better are they going to be? Or how much more vehemently anti-American are they going to be? The idea that John Kerry, whose entire opposition to the war in 2004 was set up to be, he was, you know, misled by bad intelligence. He may himself be acting in a way that's misconstruing intelligence or spinning it or you know, sugarcoating it, or to use the phrase from the CBS memos. It would be a perfectly appropriate irony if that is the case. It's frustrating, and you know, I find myself wishing he was back in the Senate, Greg.
Great transition to number three, as yesterday the Senate Foreign Relations Committee voted 10-7 to approve the use of force resolution in Syria. And you say, well, we already knew that. That was yesterday's news. Well, 10-7 is an interesting number because there are 18 members of the committee. 10 voted for it. 7 voted against it. 1 voted present, which immediately led many conservatives on Twitter and elsewhere to say, how did President Obama keep his seat on the Foreign Relations Committee since he voted present so many times in the Illinois State Senate? No, it turns out Ed Markey, the man who replaced John Kerry in the U.S. Senate, voted present. And the story we're getting, Jim, is that he really wanted to vote no, but out of respect for the man who he replaced in that Senate seat, he decided to vote present on only the most significant vote he's probably going to cast this year.
You're kind of left speechless. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, there are a lot of good lines. One is that, you know, Markey himself had said the president has to come to Congress. And he'd be, you know, you have to ask me what I think, Mr. President. But I don't know. I got no real strong opinions about that. I just wanted to be asked. So, you know, and it also is that, you know, Ed Markey had been in the House for a really long time, and obviously for decades, you know, John Kerry and Ted Kennedy were the senators from Massachusetts, and they were there, and they were not going to retire. And so obviously it was, for a long time, there were a lot of very frustrated Massachusetts House members who wanted to run for Senate someday, but who weren't going to take on John Kerry or Ted Kennedy. Well, Ed Markey has fulfilled his lifelong dream. He is in the Senate, and he's voting on an issue of major importance, of nothing, you know, what could be more important than whether to go to war? Present. Like, what? Why did you run, Ed Morgan? And if you want to get even greater irony, Gabriel Gomez, the Republican who ran against him, I think Gomez has said, at least in the past, that he supported, you know, striking out at Assad, and he thinks that, you know, Assad needs to be, you know. So, ironically, had Massachusetts elected a Republican, they'd have a more stable vote in favor of the president than the Democrat they elected. And what's really kind of astounding is that, you know, if he's really voting present, you know, basically it means he wanted to vote no. But as he said, he had to do it out of respect for Kerry. So I think this war is a bad idea, but because my predecessor tried to persuade me, I'm only going to go halfway opposed. The logic is just baffling. And it just seems like a parody of a weather vane, wishy-washy type of U.S. lawmaker. I really mean it, Greg, when I say I miss John Kerry in the Senate, because John Kerry would actually vote for the war in Syria before he votes against it.
Well, Mark, he still has the chance to do that because, you know, he still got the full floor vote. So he could vote present before he votes against it or for it.
Yeah, but Kerry would be more directly contradictory. So that he totally takes a stand in one direction and then he totally changes it. But he's resolute in his in each position very briefly. Marky, you know, he's like Bartleby the Scrivener. I would prefer not to vote. A little literary references for our three martini lunch today. Kind of, you know. You think we're going to go with pop culture references? No. A little bit of Herman Melville on you.
Nicely done. Nicely
Thank
done.
You.
We like to throw in a little culture, a little refined culture every once in a while. Jim, have a good day. We pray for better news tomorrow, but we're not hopeful.
Absolutely, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Friday for the next Three Martini Lunch.